Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. City of Palm Coast City Council Workshop. It is Tuesday, August 13, 2019. It is 9 a.m. Please join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please. Mayor Holland?
Here.
Councilmember Branquino?
Here.
Councilmember Cook?
Here.
Vice Mayor Clufus and Councilmember Howell are absent.
We'll open up to agenda item number D, which is public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment? You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record. Your 3 minutes will begin.
Good morning, Robert McDonald, Palm Coast. It was either last week or the week before when Councilman Clufus was the acting mayor. I requested the numbers from 2015 through 2018 from the Palm Harbor Golf Course, how much money it's costing the city every year. And as of yet, I still haven't got a response back. So whenever you have a moment, I would appreciate it. And my other comment would be to the mayor. On behalf of my family, I'd like to express our deepest condolences on your recent loss. So we're very sorry for your loss. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Frank Rendon from Palm Coast. I'm addressing the cell tower that's on Farmwork and Palm Coast Harbor. I need everybody to really Google the dangers of cell towers. The tower expands 100 million times more microwaves, which is so dangerous. Now, even our grandparents never had that problem. But the thing is that the microwave, what it does, it changes our DNA. It changes the ability, it causes cancer, it causes so many things, so many problems. Little children get affected. The towers emit high frequency radiation, okay, which the human body can only take 7.6 megahertz. These towers are generating 1900 megahertz, which are being, you know, we're actually being cooked inside a microwave. They result in headaches, memory loss, cancer most of all, cardio stress, low sperm count, birth defects, children's developments. It's just it actually alters your DNA and it changes your body's tissues, warming up your body's tissues. I could say like 30 years ago, the police department in our country got radar guns. And these radar guns were in the police cars and they used to use them and flash every day. So they kept them on and they used to put them on their lap. Within about a year's time, they all develop problems. Cancer. They develop testicular problems. They develop tumors. Numerous things. The problem here is that the cell towers are totally dangerous, and they really need to be addressed. I understand Palm Coast is giving them a 30 by 30 piece of their property, which they're leasing out. God bless you, making $100,000. God knows how much they're making. But you're going to be damaging the people in the area, everyone's going to get sick, and then we're talking class action suits. We're going to be talking, you know, people are dying. People are going to die. If you check the statistics, it is totally, totally hazardous to everyone's health. And this is something we need to address before we go and put all these towers in the community. Towers are mostly out in pastures where there's no one around, but now you're putting them right into where family lives. I mean, you're putting one where I am, and I'm only like 200 feet, about 20 yards away from it. Totally dangerous, and I just want to bring this to the council to make them understand that this is a dangerous situation that we're dealing with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
My name is Sebastian Cruz. I live in the Manhattan Wood section. I'm here this morning to try and bring it to the attention of the council. The problem I'm having with the 95 corridor, between Matassa and Wooden corridor. The noise today is unbearable. I mean, it's really loud. On certain days, you feel like you're standing right on the highway. And I'd like to know what City Council is going to do about that. That's one of my questions. And now, I just learned about the towers over here. I didn't know you could build towers in the residential areas. I didn't think you'd be able to do that for the 500 feet that he said. What's going on? And from what I understand, they're going to be building 5 more towers. There's one right there on near Columbia Avenue.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Sonia Snyder. I'm coming to you about the cell towers as well. I'm 50 yards from the new tower that doesn't have the cell pieces on it yet. The problem is that the EPA thinks that it's safe. They haven't actually got the regulatory statistics yet. But if you look at Israel and you look at Germany, who've already decided to disband their cell towers, they've noticed a 400% increase in cancers by anybody within 5 miles of those towers. So they are dismantling theirs. We might wait 20 years in this country for the EPA to say it's bad, but how many people will die? Palm Coast is a growing community, but you've got 13 parks, you've got all this recreation, you've got all this great ability to live here, but you're going to have cancer rates 4 times the national average of anybody that doesn't put these towers in a residential area. I mean, the closest house to this tower that I'm talking about is 20 feet. The cancer rate is going to skyrocket. You have one by the school in Matanzas. In Israel, where there was one directly in the same area between them and the school, about roughly 150 yards. The first year, out of 120 students, 9 of them got brain tumors. The second year, 25 got leukemia and more brain tumors. By the third year, 45 students had cancer, rare, irritating, awful, deadly cancers, because humans aren't meant to be cooked in radiation. We're not meant to live inside a microwave. And so I'm asking for an alternative solution to putting these and dismantling that one that's by Columbia, because it's deadly. And you want to grow the population to enjoy to be here. But if your cancer rates at Palm Coast get out that it's 4 times the national average, how many people are going to move here? How many businesses are going to move here? What would be the incentive to come here if the rate of cancer is 4 times living somewhere else or putting your business somewhere else? I think it's critical that this is addressed, whether the EPA is up to standard or not. Look at what other countries, look at Germany, look at Israel, look at the UK, and then do your own study. Just Google dangers of cell towers. Take a reader near any cell tower, go within 200 and 500 yards, and hold that reader and let that thing go off like you're at Chernobyl. Do we want that? Do you really want that? Because everybody in this room is gonna get cancer or has a high 4 times chance of anybody else that doesn't live near one. Everybody in this room. Deadly. We shouldn't be doing that. We should find another way. Thank you.
Next speaker. No, I'll close public comment. Matt, can you make sure that we get that information to Mr. McDonald?
Absolutely.
Today?
Yes. I have it actually before
we leave. Thank you for the rest of the speaker's comments. As far as Matanzas Woods noise, that has not been a discussion on this council to this day. It hasn't been brought up. And I appreciate your input on cell phone towers. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number E, which is presentations. Presentation of the FY 2020 proposed budget for internal services, capital projects, special revenue, and all other remaining funds.
Yes. We're here this morning to present to you the, I believe this is our fifth budget workshop, and we're going to be talking today about the internal services, our capital projects, special revenues, and all the remaining appropriated funds. We will come back to City Council on the 27th, and at that point, we'll be presenting all the funds from the general fund to these. Our public hearing is, our tentative is scheduled for September 4th, and our final public hearing is on September 18th. A little overview, we're going to go over how the budget as a whole is addressing City Council priorities. We'll also talk about personnel changes just for the funds that we're discussing today. And then in detail, our internal service, capital projects, and all remaining funds. As you can see here, this is a summary of the City Council priorities and which funds are affected. We're not going to go one by one. We've been over these details before, but I wanted to highlight the impact to other funds that we've been discussing today. As it refers to the Innovation District, these are items that are included in the State Road 100 CRA budget, and they include the Art District, the Innovation District Marketing Plan, and also Innovation District events. Staffing changes, the fleet and the facilities funds are not requesting any personnel. The internal services fund for IT is requesting two positions, and we'll go into detail as we go over these budgets. We'll start with the internal services fund, and this is the fund that collects from all city departments to maintain our fleet. We do have the chief and Roger available today if you have any questions as we go through the detail of the proposed replacements for next year. But as you can see, the increase in this fund is basically in capital expenditures, and we're also proposing the replacement for a ladder truck, and the chief will have a little bit more detail on that. This is the schedule for the new equipment. Capital expenditures are about $5.49 million for the fund. And here's the detail on the fire truck. Chief will go along.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. The looking at the replacement of the ladder truck, it's a 2006 aerial. We got it in 2006 with the DRI from when Town Center was originally created. It had an estimated 15-year lifespan. We're approaching the 13th year, or by the time we get done with this proposal, it'll be the 14th year. And we were looking to replace this in 2021. I'm going to turn most of this over to Roger because he's been working on the piece of equipment. And our major concern is there is some value in the truck that we have today, but we have a replacement problem where we are constantly repairing this truck. Maybe if our project probably needs to run it a lot better.
A question before we go into that. So I wasn't on the council when this was purchased, but the ladder truck itself, I mean, how high does that reach? Like, what's the tallest building we have in the city?
It's a 100-foot stick, a 100-foot ladder, okay. Which means when you place it, usually you can get a 7-degree angle on it, so you can look in the range of about 56 to about 62 feet high, depending on your angle of approach.
So those big, tall condos that are going in Colbert Lane, I don't know how many are there, 5 or something like that are going in.
Right.
Have you discussed that with them? I mean, as far as, how does that happen as far as it reaching the tallest capacity possible?
The tallest capacity would probably get to the 5th or 6th floor. But with the design of the fire prevention program and the systems that they have put in place, it's going to be a sprinkler system all the way up to the top floor. There's not a lot of places that are going to get a ladder truck or anything that's going to be higher than 100 or 110 foot. And a 110 foot stick would probably reach around the 7th floor.
So do the county and Flagler Beach have ladder trucks?
The county had a ladder truck. It's out of service. Flagler Beach does have a ladder truck. It's 100 foot, and it predominantly does most of the beach corridor. Most of the recent discussions with county is we are operating our aerial device at Station 25 for regional response. The county couldn't replace theirs because it has a lot of a defect in it. So we're picking up a lot of the calls for aerial response regionally. Flagler Beach does everything up A1A, and Palm Coast does everything around Vail, City of Palm Coast, north and south.
Thank you.
So I was asked the same question, actually, by Mr. Norbert. We don't have any tall buildings over here. I was going to ask, basically, you need an explanation. Why we need it over here, and I agree with you.
You look at the idea of the size of a building, anything that the ISO, the Insurance Safety Organization, looks at as a high-rise or something tall that's over 35 feet, and that's a big number. So when you look at an aerial device, it's actually going to a call. We're not going there to take a lot of people out of tall buildings. We're doing a lot of high-altitude water spray and suppression. So when anything over 35 feet, we consider out of reach by a standard fire engine and a ladder truck of it. Now, if you look at a lot of the buildings, most two-story homes, they top out right at 35 feet at the peak. But anytime you put an apartment complex or in, this is going to be a critical piece of equipment that'll be stationed right in front of that building.
So in your expert opinion, we need one.
Yes. With all that being said, the coverage area that we're being asked to take care of, the amount of downtime and the cost. In the last 3 years since I've been dealing with fire apparatus, we've spent over $110,000 keeping that truck running on the road safe for our guys. And it's just between the money and the downtime, it doesn't make much sense for me to wait one more year when we have a chance of.
So, it has to be a specific training to maintain that piece of equipment, correct? So mm-hmm. Do you or your team undergo that specific training?
We really have.
Okay.
All right. Some of it we don't do. We don't have anybody that's aerial certified, but we do have a company that does come out whenever we need them and take care of the aerial part of the but brakes and all the other ASE certifications, EBT certifications for pumps. I have three guys that are now certified to work on the trucks.
Are we going to run into the same problem that we had now, not having the expertise to take care of that truck? Are we going to run into the same problem?
We do have
the expertise. And part of why we're here is the folks that are working on the truck now have identified this truck is we're putting a lot of money into this, and by the time the breakover is for us to sell the truck in the future, to trade it in and get a new truck, the value might not be there that we can get the best value for. We've got the three mechanics that dedicate the time and training that they've done for this piece of equipment and the tower truck, and I'm pretty confident in their abilities to diagnose. When we did have the truck go out for repair, I'd go to South Carolina.
Twice.
So
that's $7,000 just to get it there and back.
So you're looking at a piece of equipment that was created in Wisconsin that goes to a repair facility that's in South Carolina, and the new piece of equipment that we're looking at is actually out of Ocala, state contract, which meets all our needs and it's within the budget. If we do have something that goes wrong, instead of going to South Carolina, we drive it an hour and a half away, and it's local.
Oh. Locally, it's not made in Hawaii. It would be a lot more money than South Carolina.
in the past, we most recently were more confident in the E1 product that's out of Ocala. They're showing that they're a very big competitor nationally, and they're working with all the fire departments regionally to try to bring their product home. A lot of these products that are built in South Dakota or Wisconsin or Michigan, their regional response is far away. You have to go somewhere, take the truck to get some extensive repair. And that's what we've been running into with this ladder truck.
That and parts. Parts are starting to get quite difficult to get. When you do get them, you pay quite a bit of money for them. It's time.
So we're looking at the replacement acceleration for 2020. If we order the truck this coming year, it would take 12 months?
Roughly, or a little better at this point.
12 months for delivery, so we're looking at just getting in right before we were going to trade the truck in anyway.
What are our fire impact fees? I mean, I know we were supposed to be going through an analysis to make sure that the impact fees that were being paid represented the current value and need that we have, and, when you're talking about increased cost of equipment,
right.
And you're talking about growth and it happening, a direct correlation between the two is there. Have we gone through that process, or have we started that process?
Yes, we have. We requested quotes, received quotes, made a selection on who the firm is going to be to do the climate impacting study for us, and we're currently working with them.
So how much do we have in our fire impact fee fund? Does that get taken out of this?
Or? No. This will be coming out of the fleet replacement fund. Okay. So when this was originally purchased in 2006, the repayment program started. So we actually have the funding in place to purchase it in 2020. We'll be accelerating only 1 year. So 1 year, you know, we'll be paying ahead. But we do have the funding in the fleet fund for it. The fire impact fees, the firm's going to be working with his chief and Carl to determine what our needs are going to be in the future and how do we fund those. And once we have that, we'll bring it back to City Council and we'll bring the respective budget amendments that would go with the new rate study for action.
Do we have funds available in that fund?
We have, about $1 million in the fire impact fee fund.
What is that allocated? What is that earmarked for today?
We're going to go over the capital projects fund, but basically we've just been rolling it every year as we receive, you know, more fire impact fees until the point comes when we need it for a new construction.
The short answer, Mayor, is anytime we expand or branch out to a new location, build a new fire station, that's when we can use the impact fees.
So it can be used for one-time capital purchases, but not operational.
Right. This is replacement.
So, you know, what I'd like to see in the future is when we do that rate study and come back, if you can tell us sort of your master plan of, you know, of the fire department as a whole, as far as different locations as we grow, making sure our response times are what they are.
10-year plan?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's important because we're approving a lot more development. Again, you know, this is not a downturn of the economy, and I would like to get a better sense of what the strategy is going to be. And this was really why also the reason I wanted us to look at the law enforcement impact fee. And I think we really need to focus on that, just because that can be used for equipment, vehicles, whatever the sheriff needs to keep our community safe. Can't be used for operational, but it can be used for that kind of purchase. So the more people we have moving into our community or building or new construction, that is, again, adding capacity to our needs of public safety. And it'd be nice to have some new growth pay for some of that.
With the fleet equipment, similar to what we've done in the past, when we bring to you at the final public hearing, the final budget to approve, we'll also bring the replacement, fleet equipment replacement that can be ordered at the 2019 rates.
Correct.
And Roger can speak a little bit more to that.
Past few years, everything that we're purchasing off the Florida State Sheriff's contract, we get to use 2 years in a row if we purchase issue POs on the last day of the fiscal year. The new contract starts October 1st, and by doing so, we get the same pricing, actually 2 years in a row.
Do we try to, does this allow us to purchase the vehicles that we are able to purchase locally?
Fleet is we've tried, I don't know how many times, but Pomco's Ford, Gibbs Chevrolet. They don't have a fleet team. There's a lot to it when you order fleet vehicles versus regular standard vehicles and all the upfits that have to be done to the trucks. Because usually they'll send, the factory sends a chassis, just a chassis, right to the manufacturer where we have the bodies and all the upfitting done. So there's a lot to know. And they don't want to put the upfit into, they don't make a lot of money on the truck. They make their money on the outfit.
They're set up for local sales for the individual, as opposed to they don't make a lot of money on the wider sale. But the other aspect is we do utilize Pomco's Ford a lot for extenuating maintenance work that we can send out to them.
All the warranty work is done there. So right. They kind of even like it better. They don't have to deal with all the stuff to purchase in the truck, but they get all the warranty work.
We're tax exempt, so we don't pay when we purchase the vehicle sales tax or, okay.
Just two quick questions. Forgive my ignorance. What's a fuel polisher trailer?
I spend myself about $7,000 a year in keeping our fuel tanks clean, and Danny Ashburn spends a lot more than that. We need our emergency generators to run when we have an emergency. Most of the year, they sit there and they exercise for once, twice a week. But fuel goes bad pretty quick, and we've decided that probably be in our best interest. I think Danny just put on 54 generators, Dan.
He just had a 30, you know.
Anyway, we got a lot of generators. Between the fire stations, all the well sites, all the lift stations, we need the things to run when we have an outage. So this trailer will be able to go from station to station, clean the fuel, treat it, and hopefully avoid a lot of future problems.
Currently we have 21 generators at pump stations, 9 portables, big tanks at the treatment plants. We're putting on 35 more through the FEMA grant. It costs roughly $1,000 a piece to have somebody come in and polish the fuel. So I think we're at a point now where we need to invest in this.
I think it's a cleaning process more for the fuel than anything. What we do with the fire stations is we've got a 1,000-gallon tank that get the fuel out of that for the fire truck, so we take it from the bottom and then we wait and we cycle through the fuel so that the fuel just doesn't go stale. And this will help keep the fuel going and clean.
And the other question was this, the ladder truck, 1,000,020. Does that include the value of the older truck that we're selling, or this is just the price of the new one?
That's the price of the new one.
So not including what we're gonna, okay.
And we'll put it on market for sale.
Estimated value of the one we have now, we're hoping to get around a couple hundred grand for.
And is that just people buy it for parts, or?
No, there's a lot of, we just sold one of the battalion trucks on auction that needed a rear end and had transmission trouble, and they had nothing.
Wow.
They bought the truck they could have got like $9,200 for it.
There's some early feelers out already. There's a couple places upstate New York that would use a truck just like this. Because it's affordable, their volunteer organization could possibly buy it for cash. We also have a person that we could put out to a wholesale market and see if there's any organization that could spend $200,000 to $250,000 on the truck and then do the maintenance on it, which is kind of how we got our first truck years ago. We picked up an old Mac, $75,000, we put some money into it, and then after a while we kept putting more money into it, we realized it's time to get the bigger truck. So that's when we ended up with a tower truck with a bucket on it. But it's there's a market out there for used vehicles. We just want to make sure that we take advantage of how long it is in good condition that we can sell it for our most money that we can get for it.
So how many calls would you estimate in the last few years this truck has been on a scene, on a call?
It usually goes out second due to every structure fire in the city, and it goes out for most fire alarms. Now that it's running first due out of station 25, it's picking up all calls out of station 25 zone first due. So it's running some significant amount of calls.
Jerry, so if I understood what you're saying, this is one of the trucks that we send out from station 25 when we back up a medical emergency call for Flagler County.
Right, and the deal that we're working out with the county is you can't put all your eggs in one basket. The ladder truck is going to work for the county because it will improve their ISO and will respond regionally with their ISO ladder truck to make sure that they've got ladder coverage. The county is going to take their next engine purchase and make a heavy rescue. That heavy rescue is going to respond anywhere in the city and respond for all accidents. So in one essence, we might be working in the ladder truck a little bit more over the next 10 or 15 years, but we're also going to be sending another truck to do a backup call for other areas as a dual response. It's a good process that we could start looking at with the county as responding, but it's for us to get the new truck down and start running the calls, The idea is to add another unit down the road and take the weight off of the response regionally, where this just does all the responses for air devices.
Yeah, I mean, you're the expert on this kind of stuff and our maintenance people, but the using a ladder truck, I mean, do we use the tower truck?
We use the end for that.
I mean, it seems to me there ought to be a cheaper truck that we could use for that out of Station 25.
There is a cheaper truck, but it takes staffing to do it, and we're working with staff now to work on a plan to develop to come in, and we'll have that in the 10-year plan. It's a growing process. We have to get to the end result, but these are the steps we're going to have to take between now and then to get that done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is a look at our facilities fund. Again, internal services, so it's allocation from the different divisions to maintain safe facilities. Not much increase in this fund. IT internal service fund. So 2019 was the first year that we separated the IT enterprise from the IT operations. In the past, this internal service portion of the IT operations was being partially funded by the fiber revenues. So that is not the case anymore. It is self-sufficient. That's why you'll see an increase in the internal allocations to the departments. We've also grown the fund to meet, needs of the organization. We are proposing two new positions, a GIS specialist and IT Enterprise Services Administrator, to start in January of 2020. A look of our communications fund. This is where we will be paying for the new emergency radio system that we are working with the county on. This is funds that had been collected since the last 800 megahertz update, so we do have the funds available. And once this is done, we'll start planning for the next one. So continuing to allocate to the different divisions so that we have funding available in the future.
So one-time, expenditure into that investment, what's the ongoing cost for the new communication system? Is that increased?
I think it's about that $60,500. I think $50,000 is the maintenance on the radios that we will be, I believe, paying the county for on an annual basis.
So is that to Motorola to maintain them? Does the county maintain them themselves, or does the company?
I believe it's the company.
So pretty soon, City Council will be seeing two agreements. One is for the purchase of the equipment that we'll be purchasing directly. Some communities are financing it. We've saved the money, so in order to avoid those financing costs, we're going to pay directly. And then the second agreement you'll see, hopefully in the coming weeks, is the maintenance access agreement. So the $50,000 Helena was talking about was to pay the county for access to the service, and the county staff will actually do the repairs they can do in-house. And then the additional funds is for parts that need to be replaced. And of course, the new radios will have they'll come with a warranty, of course, and then we will start saving for the next replacement cycle, so we will not having 15-year-old radios and things like that in the future. So, but you should be seeing that in the next few weeks. We're just waiting on county to return the interlocal agreements for your review.
I think this was part of their presentation when they were here. I think at the beginning, wasn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're currently in the process of getting the towers up. My understanding is most of the equipment has been delivered. Getting ready for...
So the money that will be set aside for future communication devices, that just comes out of this fund, and just how much a year do we put it away to build up that fund?
It's about $250,000. That allocation, that internal allocation of $270,000 includes the maintenance portion of it, and then whatever's left from that $270,000 just carries into the fund balance and rolls every year until a point where we'll need to replace it. And it's paid by the different departments of the city.
So is there any opportunity to tap into FEMA for grant dollars for this?
We haven't seen that possibility. That most counties in the state of Florida do have to fund them themselves, including the equipment. But it's something we can look at.
I mean, you would think with all the hurricanes and storms and, you know, that would be something that I think we want communities to be able to invest in. I would ask Kevin Guthrie with the Division of Emergency Management, as well as first on FEMA dollars and how to tap into those as a municipality. He might have some ideas or some suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Definitely follow up on that.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Look at our health insurance fund. This is where we maintain the employee health insurance program. It's the same concept, internal service, so every division pays into the health insurance fund. We're going to move into the capital projects funds, and that's where Carl is going to come in.
Okay, so for the first fund, it's the capital projects fund. These are the sales tax portion of the dollars that come to the city. You can see it's just over $3 million a year. We do have some other transfers in here. The bulk of these transfers were, we were asked to look at how we could advance the public works facility. So we show various transfers coming in from the respective departments for their fair share of the new fleet facility. So we have utility, we have stormwater, and we have building dollars coming into this fund, and that's going to help advance the fleet facility at Public Works. We also show some revenue coming in, transfer of recreation impact fees. That again is to bring dollars into this account to help move the public work facility ahead faster. Those dollars are reimbursement for the expansion portion of the community center. So those are recreation impact fee dollars that can cover that portion of the project. And these show the expenses. We have two grant projects. We have Sesame Boulevard Path, which is just wrapped up. Those are CDBG funds that cover that project. The other grant project I'll touch upon is highlighted in pink here, is the City Hall generator facility. And we just did hear word back from FEMA that they have approved our grant modification, and that will be given back to you here as soon as we receive it from the state, and we'll be able to move forward with that purchase. We can see in this fund we have some various projects, some rehab on some paths, the Holland Park project, phase two, some park renovation and rehab projects, some IT capital upgrades.
You can see Holland Park be done? Phase two.
I believe it's next June is the completion date.
Okay, next June. I get that question a lot. Okay, it's on track and...
It is on track. They've mobilized. They've actually started work now. They're working on Pavilion 3, redoing the bathrooms. The maintenance building will be starting, and the bocce courts will be starting. We're working in the background on the splash park. You know, everyone wants to know when the splash park's coming. That's a long lead time. There's the health department permitting phase that we're going through right now. Then there's a four-month process to go through the finalizing all the components for manufacture, and then another 4 months to build out some of the pieces. So it's 8 months before they can even begin the construction and implementation of that. So that's going to be the last piece that gets put in place at the splash park.
For the dog park, is that going?
Those are underway. Those we've done owner direct purchase on a lot of items, and that is one of those structures that's already been processed and moving along.
Literally tell me they're so excited about that. So that's on track too.
Yes.
Okay.
Wetland, the mitigation bank expenses.
That is the land purchase we made at the north end of the city, north of Matanzas.
Okay.
And east of I-95. Those where we purchased the land that had some wetland impacts. We've been working with the state and Army Corps regarding restoration activities. That's been permitted, but we were also looking at making enhancements to build up some wetland credits. So rather than purchasing credits from a bank, we can do it here. Those first dollars are just to do the restoration because we're obligated to do that. the initial dollars are to secure the property to keep four-wheelers and ATVs and that sort of use off of the property to cause damage to any of the wetlands.
So, are we at a stage yet where we would estimate how many credits we'd like entitled to?
That's kind of what's in flux. The state, we're at about 20 credits and the Corps is only at 10. So right now, for only 10 credits with the Corps, it doesn't make sense for the dollars we'd have to invest. So we could purchase those credits from a bank at a more reasonable rate. So there's changes going on with the credits in the Corps. So we're kind of waiting that out to see how things shake out with that. So we may move forward with a portion of the restoration because that's not going to impact some of the other items with the credits. But the initial dollars is really just to secure this the site.
Okay.
You can see the public works facility we show here. We'd start design this coming year's budget, and then the following 2 years we would construct the project. So this year we would hire, this coming fiscal year, we'd hire a construction management firm and a design firm and get that kicked off. We have some various energy and ADA improvement projects here. You can see the public works facility in the fifth year is when we're projecting to be able to begin the design for the second phase of public works. Streets Improvement Fund, again, highlighted in pink are the grant projects. Those are really for the Old Kings Road extension and widening. That's really the right-of-way phase for this year. The Lakeview path that was constructed, and then we have some beautification at I-95 interchange and a gateway sign that we're seeking dollars for. One of them, we have a JPA for the interchange, but the gateway sign, it's not committed or in the work program. We're just seeking those dollars. The bulk of this item in here is really the street resurfacing program. This coming fiscal year, we were able to fully fund that program through savings on other projects where we didn't have to expend the contingency that we had set aside. We did some in-house construction on various projects, and we did have a few projects come in under budget. So with those savings, we were able to make up the funds we needed to fully fund the Streets Improvement Fund for this coming year. But in future years, there is going to be a projected shortfall of like $1.6 million in 21 and then close to $2 million each year thereafter. So that is something that we'll have to address in the coming years.
Is that based on how many miles?
It's based on the pavement road condition. So basically, this past year we hired a company that scanned and did analysis of all the roadway surface and they assigned a PCI, Pavement Condition Index. And we basically said that the summation was the existing condition of the roads, we had two categories, the arterials and collectors, and then our residential roads. And the overall average condition that we are at today is what we want to maintain. So they basically said to maintain that current level of asphalt condition, you need to spend this many dollars per year. And it's sort of tied to lane miles, but it's more about
conditions.
It's more about meeting a payment condition rather than meeting a budget or lane mile criteria.
So we'll have to figure that out at one point. I mean, how we fund that. That's important. We cannot let our roads deteriorate. We have to figure that out.
Well,
I think that would be a bad idea.
We're already starting those conversations, Mayor, knowing that
okay.
It's not going to be acceptable to come to you or the community here with
okay.
funded road projects. So we are looking at ways already that we're going to be able to try to close that gap or meet that need.
So absolutely. We will have probably, hopefully, a solution before the money runs out.
Yes, we're not waiting for
okay.
that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What are the main factors for road deterioration? I know weather is one of them.
Yeah, weather's one. You know, traffic, especially truck traffic, starting and stopping movements, you know, have an impact. Weather, rain conditions, how wet it is, what the soils are underneath the roadway, how the roads are constructed. Some have better construction than others. Some have a high water table. So there's a lot of factors that come into play. But so it can vary. You know, we project it based on the model, based on current traffic counts, and we update it as we move along. But there are it can't be the same every year because there are factors that are ever changing.
The
the study that we had done with the LIDAR and the, you know, the extensive pavement study, how is there a schedule in which we're going to need to redo that? I mean, I understand these maintenance requirements are based on keeping the roads in the condition that study showed they were in.
They recommend to come back every 4 or 5 years and do that, especially the first 2 or 3 times, because that's really going to set a parameter for our roads, our location, our use. And then in the future years, maybe I'll just stretch it out a little bit more than that.
Don't we talk about maybe looking at beautification for Florida Park Drive in some way at the either side to enhance that? Yes. Is that in the budget?
We the items that were selected for Florida Park Drive, currently the air quality monitoring is underway. We're about halfway through our month of air quality testing. The noise testing is going to be happening. It's a one-day event, and they'll be doing that here in a couple of weeks. We put up the no truck signs, and we're working on an alternate truck route in the ordinance to implement that enforcement part of that program. And we're working internally on the landscape efforts and enhancements that potentially could be done either in the right-of-way or on private property. So all those are being looked at currently.
Not budgeted.
Well, the landscape is not budgeted because we don't know what is feasible at this point in time yet. The right-of-way is very limited between the sidewalk and the swales and the right-of-way. The landscaping in the right-of-way is, there won't be much potential to do a lot of landscaping on city property, but there may be ability for residents to do some. And I know that's part of one of the proposals that a landscape architect is looking at.
When are we going to have this traffic study done? When do we expect to have it finalized?
The report for the air quality should be probably the end of September, same with the noise report. We'd have both of those results back that we can present to you. And at that time, our landscape architect should be done through looking at the landscape options so we can put it all together and come back to you towards the end of September. The enforcement piece and the ordinance and whatnot will come back to you, but that will probably happen at a different time.
I'm just concerned without having some type of placeholder budget item, if it's deemed that there is a way to do some beautification somehow, that we don't now have the money to do anything. So I like at least something to be looked at, just putting in there as a placeholder as an option, just because I don't want us to be in this position of saying, now we have to report, now we know these are some of the solutions. It's a complicated road, we all agree and understand that, but you know, there are these things that we are, you know, can do that I think would add to at least that quality that we're looking to perform there. So if we can talk about that and absolutely get some ideas, that would be helpful.
Yes, we do have some ideas. Okay. We'll come back with that.
Another item I want to mention on here is our street lighting program. We just received the final phase of the design from Belterre down all the way down to 100. The initial phase from Pine Lakes to Palm Coast Parkway has been with FPL. We haven't gotten on their schedule yet, but we've been constantly in contact with them to get a date, but they are backlogged with a lot of statewide LED conversions. So we will get plugged in. We just don't have a date of when that first piece will get installed, and then the design will be going to them so we can come to an agreement on the rest. Not even approximate. When we did Lakeview, they said 4 to 6 months. So we're estimating it's going to be in that time frame, but they haven't even mentioned that to us yet.
And that's for the Belterre piece?
That's from Pine Lakes up to the library on Belterre.
It's crazy to me that they just don't, you know, we pay them to do this. It's not that, you know.
They've been changing, you know, tens of thousands of conversions all across the state. So that's really the big push, is to do the LED conversion. So they did our community. All ours have been converted. We were one of the first communities. But they have a lot of other communities in that cycle that are going through that same process. And that's very time consuming because there's just so many of them. So they didn't really add crews to do that program. They just kind of, everything else kind of got pushed on the back burner to move that program along.
But we have the money in the budget to
Yeah, we have some associated costs with the project. A lot of their costs are built into our monthly fee that we pay them because of their lights. But there are some pieces, some sidewalk relocations or some board. There's some various elements if we had to have power poles or various things like that. So we do have some dollars plugged in with our estimates of what we think that will cost. Until we finalize the design, we don't know. But for next year, we know what those costs are. We budgeted $250,000. That's what we anticipate spending every year moving forward to get those implemented.
We do have a good relation with Pale
Pond. Oh, absolutely. Yes. They're just overloaded with work. That's really what it comes down to. Transportation Impact Fee Fund. These are really for capacity, roadway capacity projects, and this is where we also receive a lot of DOT grant dollars as well. Old Kings Road Widening Extension, you can see the coming budget is for the first phase of Old Kings Road Widening from south of Palm Coast Parkway north to about the Staples Plaza. That's going to carry over into 2021. We will be receiving an agreement from DOT. We haven't yet. We're in their current budget. As soon as we receive the agreement, that will be coming to you, and then we'll be able to advertise for construction. The Belterre Safety Improvement Projects, that is...
Anything in there for phase two or phase three for Old Kings Road widening?
It's not in their five-year work program right now, so we don't show it in our five-year plan. We submit it as our top priority project to them every year. But they haven't plugged it into their work program yet.
Do they have any of our projects in their work program?
Right now, the Whiteview Safety Improvement Project is in the protected list for funding. We anticipate 2 to 3 years is when we'll receive funding for that, but that can vary year by year. But it is in a protected list. The Belterre Safety Improvements is on the list. Those are various packages. I think we have three different packages of various intersections, and those aren't in the protected list yet. We're going to reapply with a larger match so we can score higher, so we can see if we can advance that project.
You don't put any money aside for future years of widening for Old Kings Road? I mean, that's a major project for us.
We have some dollars in Old Kings Road widening for the extension phase that we may do a piece of that moving forward with some of the development that's occurring up there, just so we were working together in timing of making that happen. So we did plug in some dollars for that particular project. But you can see the carryover, there's money in this fund to move a project forward if the city chose to fund it on our own. Potential.
The revenues, the projected, I'm assuming in future years, the projected revenues, it's sort of flat. You don't project any sort of increase as growth occurs?
We are currently at $1.7 million, so we do believe that we will make the $2 million mark for 2019.
Okay.
That's just a conservative approach because we do have fund balance carryover. Otherwise, we would project like 1% or 1.5%.
Okay.
But this just went over the transportation impact fee happened last year on this fund. So it is indexed every year.
No, we have a traffic signal. That's the one that council approved on Old Belterre at Market Ave and Eastwood Drive. We've had a pre-construction meeting. The lead time for those signals are out like 12 weeks. So that signal will be going up about February. Just need some timing up on that particular project. Recreation Impact Fee Fund as well. We have one grant in here, application we have in. Lehigh Trailhead is one with DOT. They're paying for a portion of that project that's under design. We just were close to 60% design. The other project is at Long Creek Nature Preserve. We have a 50-50 match to do some of the remaining boardwalk and trails and overlook items, some of the site amenity type items out there. So that we haven't heard back and we have the grant yet, but we're currently in process of that. The future phase of Long Creek, we are going to be revisiting our management plan that was tied to the land purchase through the state and seeing if there are some modifications as to what the ultimate master plan will be for Long Creek. So that's going to be a future item that we'll review, updating the master plan. And then you can see the transfer of some dollars here to the Capital Projects Fund to help advance the public works facility.
in Long Creek, I mentioned this before, it's really hard to get your kayak from your car over there.
We actually, this spring, we're going to be applying to FIND to do a modification to that kayak launch, even getting in the water,
yeah.
You know, making for like things landing with the rollers. And we're looking at options right now. So we're exploring what options are out there, and then we'll be submitting to FIND for an application in the spring.
Yeah, because it's, it's a challenge.
Yes, it is. Even me with long arms, it's can be a drop.
I actually have a friend of mine that took some type of bicycle, and she made this carrier with it that is very cool. So every time we've gone over there, she takes out her car and she just loads the kayaks and wheels it over.
Yeah. We did talk about that with the facility, having those carts that we could lock them up at the end and have them at the building up front, you know, so it's something we can look into. Because, yeah, getting them down the trail is even a long drag. So.
It is, yeah.
The Fire Impact Fee Fund, those are the dollars here that are building up, just over $1 million. They slowly build up. This is what's underway, being evaluated now for an update. And typically, these funds have been used to construct a new station. So that's why we show in the fifth year, maybe starting up a design, because it's going to be probably at that point in time, like a $3 million facility to construct a new fire station. So the dollars just aren't there to move forward. That's our 100 CRA fund. There's this is where a lot of the innovation items are that Wynn can speak to, but in terms of the capital projects, we have Central Park community areas. We show in the future year updating the master plan, Central Park, and the site connection of City Hall to the park. And there's additional work done here. We're going to be updating that master plan, reviewing that. In the coming year, we have roundabout safety improvements in Town Center. We have those two roundabouts, and there's ways to make enhancements to those to make them safer and easier to operate for our citizens. So we'll be doing that this coming year. Wynn can come up and speak to the innovation items.
With the CRA fund, there is a piece in there where it allows for marketing of the area or events. So what we identified for this fiscal year really relates to the performance measures we had this year. One was identifying events and programming in the Innovation District to host here in our area. And so we did just that. We have three signature events that we want to do in this next fiscal year. We're actually launching one this week with the school, the I3 program, which you may have heard about. And there's some creative ways that we want to work with the students. We also want to host a hackathon, which you've heard the mayor speak about before, and also a TEDx-style talk. So we need funding to do those things, and the CRA budget allows for that. You may be familiar, the CRA budget collects property taxes, so it's not an increase in our general fund. In addition to the events, there's also, we like some marketing, so we've done all this research and all the different things that we want to do. We also need to put some dollars behind that to communicate our message of our Opportunity Zone, our Innovation District, and our great partners here in the area. So those are our requests for this coming fiscal year.
I think it's important. I mean, you know, Opportunity Zones are somewhat of a new thing. Obviously, they come from the federal side of government. And the outreach that I've had in discussions, it is really important that you come up with a marketing strategy for this Opportunity Zone to let investors know around the world that there's an option to take their capital gain dollars and invest locally in communities that help enhance our city.
Absolutely.
But they have to know about it.
And ours is a hidden gem. Most Opportunity Zones are these very blight areas, and we're very blessed to have this beautiful area right here in City Hall. And we have to get that word out, because we stand against, you know, a couple hundred other Opportunity Zones here in the nation. So,
and we've had a couple of developers that have actually inquired about it.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
We also wanted to highlight the repayment of the Kickstart program. That's something else that Wynn's been involved in. So as you can see there, we've got dollars allocated starting in 2021 for the
complexes that are already under construction, and then we have for future, and you know, as we have new developments come in, we have a budgeted future Kickstart program funding too.
Thank you. Like musical chairs.
I guess that wraps up my corner.
We're going to take a look at all of our remaining funds. And as I said earlier, the next budget workshop, we'll see everything beginning to end also. Our solid waste fund, this is where we account for the Waste Pro contract. Not much change in there. We're locked into a contract with them. Our special events fund, this is where the recycling revenue that we receive from our Waste Pro contract goes, that the use funds, and they're used for special events around the city. We do have two new events for the fiscal year 2020, a Veterans Day celebration, and we're also having holiday enhancements, and part of that holiday enhancements is an artificial tree.
So that tree last year, or lighting ceremony that would look kind of sad. Are you talking about that tree?
Okay. Looking at a big, nice looking tree that won't look wealthy.
Like this Grinch who stole Christmas, you know?
Kelly Brown.
That was so sad.
This is just a look at our disaster reserve fund. These are leftovers from the two hurricanes that we received. As you can see, we are at about 91% received for Hurricane Matthew. With Irma, we're about 75%, but the bulk of the items that are outstanding with Irma are we're not eligible for yet, which is DAC, and also the construction on the pipework for stormwater. So as the projects are finished and FEMA's done review, we anticipate the funding. Yes,
please. Yes. Am I getting any more money other than this? Hmm? We just got the 2.7 and the 3.1.
Yeah. Yes, we do have about $1 million outstanding for Irma, but okay. You know, it's for DAC and the pipe programs for stormwater and the debris removal staff time, which we it's already in the works.
So that fund will become whole again.
Yes, it will.
Correct. And then if we ever do have a disaster occur, I know, I only say that we would be able to tap into those
yes.
funds and not our general revenue.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The whole goal is to bring it back to the $2.5 million balance that we had prior to Matthew. So once we receive those reimbursements, we'll be at that level and we won't have to rely on the general fund reserves.
You know, and that's important to know because there are many cities, especially in Florida, did not have a special reserve recovery fund. So this really helped us dramatically during our two events.
Yeah, because we did have two hurricanes within the same fiscal year. Yes, absolutely. So we had the funding in place already for the first hurricane and the second. It was general fund reserves that were good. Yeah, we're very lucky and fortunate to have those types of policies in place in Palm Coast.
Like you might argue that luck doesn't have anything to do with it if you
we were fortunate
to have those funds in place, or otherwise we would have borrowed it.
Yeah.
And through the nose.
Yes. So look at our CDBG fund. I believe Jose presented the plan for the 2020 state year at your last meeting. So this is the budget that goes with that proposed plan. Our BAC, these are remaining funds from the dissolution of Enterprise Flagler. So currently what is left in this fund is being added to the Shop Local campaign.
Blast from the past. That's many years ago.
Yes. We still have about $5,000 left.
Wow.
The O'Kane's World Special Assessment Fund, this is where we account for the repayment of the O'Kane's Road widening phase one.
I believe it's an item on the agenda today for the roll to be provided to the tax collector for this year's repayment. The loan is being repaid and it includes 5% interest. This is where we account for developer contributions, and every year Carl's team, as they're developing the budget, they look into what's in here and if they can use it for a specific project a year, then we transfer. Police Education Fund, this is for advanced and specialized training for Flag County Sheriff's Office. So we do work with the Sheriff's Office to transfer the funding to them during the fiscal year, so it's available. Neighborhood Stabilization Fund, these are balances left in there for housing programs, and Jose also manages this. Are there any questions?
No, that's a great job as always. I appreciate your attention to detail and your conservative approach.
Conservative approach.
Yes.
Thank you.
Agenda item number F2 is a resolution 2019 approving a work order with Case. Technologies for the pipelining project located at Providence Lane and Clubhouse Drive. I'm going to have to tell them to change their.
This is for two projects where we have existing pipes that are failing and we can't access them to replace the pipes. One on Providence Lane is about 2 feet from the side of a home. Then we have one on Clubhouse that actually runs underneath the breezeway in a condo building. So we're asking to have in situ form line the pipes in place.
Also, any questions?
What's the length of this pipe, Greg?
Do not recall, probably a couple hundred feet of the ones in the clubhouse. Probably 100 feet, maybe, on Providence.
611,000 per 100 feet? That's basically what it is.
I could be off on the footage. I don't recall it on how the. It's based on continuing services agreement previously agreed upon.
This is adding to an existing project, I believe, but the total is 605. It's an additional 105,000 for these two replacements that are failing that we caught. I would like to get them done before the next big rain season, as Carl did. Right, you want to bring us up to speed on that? So the total encumberment is that 611, I believe you're seeing.
This
portion is just one of the problems. No, it's just an add-on to catch preventive maintenance of a problem we discovered that has failed in Carlin.
That's correct. There's other items in that budget, okay. 105,000.
That's why I was finding a little too much. So, but it's 105.
Correct.
For that job, thank you.
Any other questions?
No. I'm happy now.
We could have done a better job. I apologize in that background explaining the second phase. So we'll do that better next time. So I apologize for that, Mr. Martin.
Thank you. Agenda item number 3, ordinance amending Article 2, City Council to add a new subsection entitled Electronic Campaign Filing of the City of Palm Coast Code of Ordinance.
Morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
This is to allow our candidates for City Council to be able to utilize the electronic filing system for all their campaign accounts. It will make my life much easier, as well as the candidates, and it would bring more transparency to the public. Instead of having to request it, it'll be available at their fingertips.
Great.
We're making a corresponding amendment to our agreement with the supervisor of elections to account for this change as well.
Okay. Good. You know, when candidates do come online, I would suggest, you know, you maybe want to walk them through the process of how to support their filing electronically.
Absolutely. Okay. We can't do it just yet. I do have one initial candidate already. And he has to begin with doing paper filing, and then once the approval of both the ordinance and the interlocal that's being proposed for September 3rd, then he will be able to switch over. A little bit of logistics to that, but we're working through it with Katie.
Thank you. Okay. Agenda item number 4 is a resolution approving final nuisance abatement assessment.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the with the city does a notice of remedy for mostly predominantly vacant lots where we give them a reasonable time. If they don't correct it within the reasonable time, we use our contractor, we correct the violation, and we invoice them. And then if it's not paid, it goes on the tax roll. And it was 260 residents or locations at $115,000.
Council, we've been doing this since 2010 under our nuisance abatement program. It's a methodology that I think Barbara and I would agree is gives the code enforcement group an additional tool to try to deal with problems that might just take too long and never get or just wouldn't get fixed in a timely basis. It gives us another tool to deal with problems that neighborhoods are having, and the city gets made whole, and that's important too.
I agree. I think so. Reception is everything. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 5 is a resolution approving the Old Kings Road special assessment roll to be transmitted to the Flagler County Tax Collector. Hi again.
Hello.
Just a great day.
This is the item we were just talking
hello.
About. And hello. It's the repayment of the special assessment for the Old Kings Road widening phase 1. This is the annual roll that we sent to the tax collector.
Council, any questions or discussion on this item? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Agenda item number 6 is a resolution approving piggybacking the Florida Sheriff Association contract with Terry Woods Power Corp for the purchase of a 60 kilowatt generator package.
Yes, this is just the replacement of an existing generator, about 15 years old. It's at a pump station, a wastewater pump station that serves the Ring Fire School. And about 15 years old, it will cost over half its value to fix it, so we recommend replacing it.
Council, any questions on this item? Thank you. Agenda item number 7 is a resolution approving master services agreement with Coherent Staffing Solutions, JMark Inc. of Central Florida, DBA Manpower, and AU Staffing for as needed use of temporary labor.
We just use temping services to fill in the gaps of our staffing needs.
Give me an example of what that is. Like,
Last year, IT needed an admin to come in. They were sharing one admin between 3 divisions, and we needed one specifically for IT to handle phones and help with projects on that end. So we went out to, at the time, it was Sphereon was our vendor at the time. So this is just precautionary.
The temporary labor, I mean, I'm assuming we try to find local candidates, correct?
Yes.
So
yep.
This organization agency works with local candidates?
Yes. Yep.
Questions? Okay. Agenda item number G is another opportunity for residents to speak. If they have not spoken at the beginning of the agenda, we open up the public comment at the end of the agenda. Anyone wish to make comment, please state your name for the record. Your 3 minutes will begin. Now I'll close public comment. Take it back to discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda.
I miss Nick.
Oh.
He's on vacation in a good place.
Yes, he is in a good place.
That's it.
It won't be brief because I'm doing it, but one brief thing. I attended the Humane Society event last Friday night honoring County Attorney Al Adib for his efforts on behalf of animal welfare in the county over the last million years, and also honoring Representative Renner for his efforts in the last legislative session. But one thing that did catch my attention in all of our discussion of generators and backups and all of that is that apparently the society is in line for some FEMA grant money to harden the animal shelter, which is a persistent problem with folks that have to leave their homes and can't find shelter that will take their pets, and therefore decide to stay rather than evacuate because they don't want to leave their dog or cat behind. So struck me as a very worthy project, and the reason I bring it up is because apparently there is a matching component to that grant or to their hardening efforts that they're going to be looking to the community for assistance to make up the difference. So if you want to make sure that our animals are protected as we would all like to be protected with the steps that the city's taking and private property owners are taking, I urge everybody to keep an eye out for what can be done to help the shelter get there. Generator in place and also get their storm shutters and other improvements that they're looking for with this grant. And I know we have a contract with them to serve as the city's animal shelter, so if there's any opportunity for the city to partner with them, I think that would be a good idea as well.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Good food to you.
I just had one question. I know I was not able to attend the council meeting and discussion disbanding the Parks and Rec committee that had not met. I know with our new Parks and Rec director, in particular, I don't know if this was addressed or discussed about the arts grants and how they will be administered and how that process will work. Was that discussed?
Sure. Why don't we have one come up and sit here?
Good morning, Mayor. The cultural arts grants will be reviewed in-house by a group of city staff. Myself, our marketing supervisor, Denise Bevin, Jose Papa, and Kelly Little-Downey. We will make the recommendation to you for approval. And then in future, we would hope that the Parks and Rec Foundation absorb those responsibilities. But for right now, it'll be done by in-house staff.
I just want to make sure we weren't losing the momentum. Okay. I don't have anything else at this time. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Mayor, Council, just one. Comment more of a remembrance of one. I think it's important. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the significant loss to the community, and specifically to the legal community of Sidwell. From everything I've read and from my brief opportunities to work with him, he was of tremendous value to our community as a whole, and specifically to the legal community. And I know that he would miss tremendously by the county and by Palm Coast, and extend our wishes to his family and friends.
Discussion by city manager.
Just two real brief items. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. We've got good resolution moving forward with the coral reef court issue. I didn't brief you about that last week. We wound up withholding a payment to Miller Pipeline in the amount of $230,000. In fact, we haven't released that check yet, but that was the impetus to get settlements and get the homeowners rebuilt and back in their homes. So happy to report we've got that moving. And second of all, just real briefly, just wanted to echo the sentiment. You know, being fairly new, just a few months in finance, I think I made Elena's job even more difficult than normal. But my thanks to Elena and the finance team for putting together an amazing budget process and budgets thus far, and really getting me up to speed. So I just wanted to thank them and tell you how much I appreciate the work they do.
If the sewers and the water lines and the storm water are boring to most people, the dollars that pay for them are even more so. Every time I dig into one of these things, I guess just a second, your statements, man. I'm always amazed that anybody can keep track of this, much less as well as our finance team manages to every year. So.
Okay. Okay. Nothing else?
Motion to adjourn.